Yes.
Yes, we can see that. Hello everyone, it's Troll. We will just give a couple of minutes for the folks to join in. Hi, Samya. We are just giving a couple of minutes for the folks to join in and then we can start.
Sounds good.
Hi, Samya. Great to have you back.
Hi, Jessica. Sorry, I'm here, but I'm listening and off camera for this.
That's all right. So I believe we can start the session, and we already have 30 participants, and then the other participants can start joining us as well. So good morning and welcome everyone. Thank you all for taking the time out of your busy schedules to attend today's our informative session on from constraint to scale practical AI for not-for-profits, and we are truly glad to have you with us. For those who may not know me, I am Kuratula, and I'm the executive assistant and a membership coordinator at the Council of Agencies Serving South Asians. And it's my pleasure to welcome our members and staff to this important learning opportunity. Before we start the session, I would like to let you know that this session is being recorded, and the recording, along with the presentation slides and relevant resources, will be shared with all the participants after the session. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker, C-suite marketing and operations leader at leading digital marketing agency Toronto. Raghuram brings 30 plus years of experience, including 20 plus years in management, operations, and business delivery. He specializes in revenue operations, marketing operations, AI enablement, and end-to-end process optimization. He spent nearly a decade in India scaling operations across IT services, BPO, and consulting. In Toronto, he has led digital marketing strategy and operations of various marketing agencies, helping 350 plus North American businesses drive growth. He currently heads operations and delivery at a leading marketing agency in Toronto, leading distributed teams and AI transformation initiatives. He also served as a vice president on the board of Sampradaya Dance Creations, and we are grateful to have him with us today to share his expertise and insights. Raghuram, welcome, and I will turn it over to you.
Awesome. Can you all hear me? I'm just trying to make sure that my controls are all in place. If you all can hear me, just give me a thumbs up on the chat, please, and I know that I'm good to go. Once again, this is Raghu. Can you confirm that you can see my slide? Awesome. Okay.
Sorry, Raghuram, can you just do the slideshow? We can't see your screen.
Yeah, let me just do that. Okay. Is this
Yes.
good? Awesome. All right. Yeah. So thanks, Gert, and thanks, Casa, for inviting me on this opportunity. Need this opportunity to kind of share what's happening in the world of AI. Trust me, it's a mess. It's extremely confusing. I'm with you. I was exactly in the same place maybe a year and a half to two back. But given the nature of the work that I do, I had a lot of AI transformation and so on and so forth, especially within the agency that I had operations at. I've had the opportunity to kind of play around a little, test things, bust a few myths. So that's really what I'm trying to share in today's presentation, right? So I will just keep going. I'll keep moving step by step. By the way, there's a QR code in front of the screen for those of you who may want to connect with me after this session. All you need to do is take your wonderful cameras, point it at that. You will get a link. Click on that, and you will see my LinkedIn profile. That's the easiest and the best way to reach out to me, and we can stay connected. All right. I think basic couple of things. If you have any questions, there is a chat window or a chat option that is enabled. My recommendation is that you please put in your questions, and as and when anything comes to your mind, there are no bad questions. There are no silly questions. There are just questions. I imagine that who I'm addressing is going to be a mix of different organizations, individuals with different levels of background and experience or expertise within this new world of AI. So please feel free and ask. Yes, correct.
Raghu, actually, we are. Can you just close the window of Zoom on because on your slide we can see it's mixing up.
Okay. You want me to switch off my camera and then slide share?
No, so we are able to see the Zoom tab as well. Can you just do the slide
Oh,
share?
that one. Okay, let me just give you one second. Okay, is this good?
We are still there is a tab for the Zoom.
Are you talking of this little thing on the top right corner of my screen? Is that what you're
No,
talking
no.
about? Okay.
I'm not sure if you are able to see the slideshow or no, but we are able to see the Zoom tab. Yeah, I think.
Oh yeah, I can see you in that window. That's fine. I will let me see if I can minimize that so that it's there sitting down at the corner. It doesn't distract us from the
Yeah,
screen. Is
okay.
this okay?
Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
I just want to feel safe that I can see you, Karan. All
Okay.
right, perfect. So moving on, we have a pretty packed agenda, but I will go as fast as I can or as slowly as you would like me to. Rest assured, I'm trying to address as many questions that you may have in your mind. Like I said, please drop in your messages, and then I will leave the last 5 to 10 minutes for Q&A. So what do we want to go through? We want to look at what is this whole thing about AI? How much of it is real? How much of it is hype or perception? What is the opportunity in front of us in terms of AI adoption? What is the size of the opportunity, and how do we go about adopting it? What are the capabilities that you as an organization or as an individual can bring within yourself and bring to your table using AI? A few terminologies so that we speak the same language. If you hear these words being thrown around, especially on LinkedIn posts and so on, you do not want to feel left out. You want to kind of relate to what the concept is. So there's a bit about that. Of all the things that not-for-profits do, I would imagine donor segmentation and grant writing are some of the more prominent activities. So I've tried to use them as case studies and look at how AI could be applicable in both of these scenarios, right? Then there are what I call as failure patterns, which have been observed largely, when you actually start executing on it. There are so many challenges that come up. I'm going to address that. Ethical AI, what to do and what not to do, and what is advised, what is appropriate. So I'm going to cover that as well. And then lastly, I want to leave all of you with a 30, 60, and 90 days AI adoption plan, right? So this plan is, again, a suggestion, a recommendation. I imagine each of you on this call come with, like I said, different levels of expertise and experience, and you have different states within which your organization sits today within the universe of AI adoption. So you will have to, adapt it to your real life situation, but at least it gives you a high level direction that you want to take in the next 3 months to kind of completely feel comfortable with this world of AI. Okay, all good. All right, so let me just proceed further and move on. Here are some stats that I've gathered, which are very specific to Canada. Again, you might see yourself in some of these stats, but just to kind of give you a perspective. Over two-thirds of not-for-profits or nonprofits are already using AI in fundraising and communications. But there is an overwhelming stat that tells us that strategy is lacking somewhere, which I think is normal. Whenever there is something very, very new, like I was very active in the dot-com era. I'm not so sure how many of you would have been around that. I'm talking of 1999 and 2000s. There was a dot-com boom. Much after that, there was the entire social media influx towards the end of the first decade of the 2000s, where there was so much happening on social media. People were kind of grappling, not sure of how to use Instagram, how to use YouTube. We've kind of gone past that. That's the situation we're sitting in today with AI. So that's what it is. 67% of Canadian not-for-profits use AI. Most of AI is being used for content creation. In fact, it's risen from 68% to 75% as of 2024. And not surprising, like in any other industry, more than 75% of not-for-profits are already experimenting with AI, right? But only 9% feel ready to operate responsibly. And I would imagine that you can kind of resonate with that. Now, what is the hype? I think as human beings, the fear of the unknown is the most psychological barrier that we kind of face when there is anything that is completely new thrown at us, right? So will AI replace staff and volunteers? That is the number one concern that's not very frequently spoken out loud, but it is like the elephant in the room, right? So in reality, AI is mostly used for basic support like tasks, writing, editing, etc. More than whatever, 89 to 90% of Canadian organizations use AI reports. It reports that there's no real change in employment levels. More than 70% expect no employment impact in the next 12 months at least, right? So there is that because of the rate at which the adoption is going. Another assumption seems to be that, we need large data sets and clean systems to start. This seems to be an overwhelming deterrent for a lot of us wanting to kind of move ahead into the AI reality. But the fact is, AI adoption actually begins with very simple, unstructured tasks such as writing, editing, and summarizing. And here are some additional stats to kind of, back that up or validate that to give you more perspective. Another objection, or I would say a self-imposed limiting belief, is that we need to be fully ready before we start. Again, not really true. It's absolutely fine to kind of dabble with AI tools and systems and then gradually get on with it. And that's what, at the end of this presentation, the 30, 60, 90-day AI adoption plan is going to address. So, what is the opportunity here, right? At a glance, and this is not specifically to not-for-profits, this is general, it's a general observation that the time cut down on repetitive work is literally by 30 to 60% if you use AI the right way, right? So here are some of the top five tasks that seem to see the maximum amount of productivity gains. So content drafting, emails, outreach, social posts, all of this can be very effectively, very easily done. The statistics suggest that almost 50% of manual effort on writing tasks can be reduced. I've seen this going down to as much as 80 to 90%. Again, it depends on the level of maturity, the level of complexity, and the application, but this is a general number there. 20 to 60% productivity gains observed in this category of work. If you're looking at summarizing reports, notes, documents, and so on, the amount of time it takes to read and assimilate information, that time is cut down drastically by using the right AI tools, right? So this could be ChatGPT, it could be Claude, it could be Grok, it could be any of those AI tools that we will get into as part of this presentation. But if you do that, a lot of the time gets significantly cut down. So like 50 to 90% of time savings. Research and information gathering, another area. Again, it's a lot of data, right? So crunching a lot of data is done very effectively with the use of AI. So there's that. Information gathering, data cleanup, right? A lot of messy data, a lot of emails, a lot of spreadsheets. Again, in this world of technology, we still thrive on, Excel sheets and CSV files and Google Sheets. So taking all the data, trying to stitch together multiple Word documents, Google Sheets, and compiling them into neat, logical, structured reports that normal human beings can read, that is a very time-consuming task. And that's across the board. Right? So these kinds of tasks can become extremely effective and fast, saves a ton of time. And then finally, again, I was trying to keep this within the context of the audiences here. Translation and multilingual communication can become very easy if you use these tools appropriately and in the right way. I hope you all can see my slide completely now. Right. So this is just to kind of give the lay of the land. If you are looking at using AI, then these are some of the great ways in which you can actually start dabbling in the world of AI. Now, all of the AI work that we could possibly do can be broadly split up into four levels, right? From beginner to advanced. So that's what I talk of by AI capability. So what is level one? Level one is fundamentally doing the work as you would, which is largely manually done with a little bit of AI assistance, right? So an example is, if you were to write a donor email, you might want to write it the way you think is the best way to write it. You might want to just paste that into ChatGPT and just, enter what is called as a prompt. You can say, hey, this is a donor email. Can you spell check? Or can you help me polish this a little bit? Or can you summarize this? Or can you extend this a little longer? It will do the job for you, right? It improves wording, it improves copy, all the kinds of fancy stuff. So you could use this, you could use tools like Canva, Grammarly, all of these tools. You probably are already using, you have been using even before AI came into the picture. These are all tools now that already have AI within them as well. So that's why I kind of wanted to give a few examples of tools that are relevant within level one, right? I'm assuming that a whole lot of you are probably already active at this level where you're kind of dabbling with tools, you're using Canvas or Google Docs or any other tools. It could be Fireflies as a note taker, it could be Zoom note taker. These are all tools that were already existing before AI came in. And all these tools now have an AI-powered feature. So that's what that is. Level two is where you start using these AI tools a little more, right? Where you kind of start seeing some efficiency gains. So let's assume that you've a standard practice is to write grant proposals, right? And if you have a template, you feed the template into a ChatGPT or a Gemini or a Claude, and you give it certain prompts saying, change a few things. This grant was for this particular use case, but now I need the same stuff written for this particular situation under these constraints. That's exactly how you would probably talk to or give instructions to an assistant or a team member within your organization, right? You can pretty much do that with any of these tools, and it will actually give you something pretty useful. Not 100% there, but pretty effective. It could be 80 to 90% or even 95% there, depending on how well you brief it or you prompt it, right? So the way you talk to a ChatGPT or the messages that you type in, that's what prompting is. So that will give you something effective. Again, as a human, your role here is to guide, review, finalize, check for facts. All the makers of AI always claim that AI may not be 100% accurate. So it is still on you to kind of verify numbers, stats, dates, and facts. In fact, one interesting hack that I use is if I'm trying to do some heavy number crunching, right? For instance, if I put in a 15-page proposal and I'm asking questions saying, from all this proposal, give me the three key takeaways that are relevant to costing. I'm essentially trusting ChatGPT to kind of, or Gemini to read all the information and give me its inputs based on what I asked. I tend to ask, are you sure? Verify your answers. And it does correct itself, right? So there are those things that you could do to improve the quality of output it generates. So this is level two. I'm assuming a lot of you probably are also on level two. To really use level two, you're not getting into not the free tools, but you're getting into paid versions of these tools, right? ChatGPT and so on, right? Level three, now you're getting into a little bit of automation. You're making this a little bit more sophisticated. In the same example, let's say if you want to write a follow-up email to a donor after an event or after a webinar, then the event attendee list, you can grab that list, you can put it into your system, and you can ask ChatGPT to write a customized thank you email, and that email can automatically be sent to the recipients, and the replies can also be organized within your email client. So this is a little bit more of an advanced use case. There you would be using tools like Zapier or Make.com or Integrately. These are tools that help connect different parts of your universe. So for instance, let's say you use Gmail for writing emails, and then you have your Gmail or you have your Google Drive folder where your document sits, and then you have a Zoom meeting where you have a list of participants, and then you have ChatGPT in which you do your research, right? So there are four different tools here. What Zapier does is it will actually connect each of these tools logically and make it an entire workflow, right? So at the click of a button, what this automation could possibly do is read or capture the transcriptions of your Zoom meeting, summarize it, capture all the email IDs of all the participants, put it on a Google Sheet, draft an email, mark that email and address to each of these individuals, and get it into your Gmail drafts folder. The entire sequence, which you would have normally done manually, now can be done automated, right? So that's what level three looks like. Now, level four is a little more sophisticated, where it is AI autonomous. It's a bit of a dangerous zone because until you are very, very sure of what you're doing, you do not want to kind of, this is like putting your car on auto cruise on a street that you haven't driven in. You want to be careful before you do that. So there are sophisticated tools here that build workflows. These workflows can be so smart that they can actually handle entire workflow cycles independent of your manual instructions. You basically give it a manual instruction at the beginning. An equivalent of that would be, auto-driven cars, for example, right? We all are looking at that. It is a new age in automobiles. You have, non-driver driven automobiles, but you're also still on the fence saying, are we ready for this? Are the streets ready for this? Things like that. So businesses are using this very effectively, but this would typically be a level four. That's just to kind of give you the lay of the land. Quick questions. If I'm too fast or too slow, I just want to get a quick time check. I know we're 23 minutes in. If you're doing okay, if you could all please give a quick thumbs up in the message. I can't see messages, Kurat, you can. And then I just want to make sure that I'm keeping pace. Okay, awesome. All right, perfect. So I'll keep moving ahead. AI terminology. So let's kind of get some of the basics in place. You may have heard a lot of these terms. I just wanted to break them down so it's easy to understand, right? You might have heard of machine learning. So what is this machine learning? Computers learn patterns from data instead of being programmed step by step. So I don't know how many of you might know, the best example that I can give you of this is when ChatGPT began. This was, I'm talking 1.5 years back, or almost 2 years back. All the usage that happened is basically how ChatGPT learned how people are using ChatGPT, right? So that is what machine learning fundamentally is all about. Right now, we're using ChatGPT version 5.2, but when ChatGPT first came out, it was still very nascent. It made a ton of mistakes. It wasn't as intuitive, but it has learned over the years with millions and millions of users using the tool. That's what machine learning is conceptually. Now, what is generative AI? So, generative AI is where you get AI to generate stuff out of nothing. Now, all of you can see my slide. How long do you think it would have taken to build an infographic like this using Canva or a design tool? I would imagine it would take a graphic designer probably half an hour or at least 45 minutes to kind of get it done. And then you review it, finalize it, tweak it, and so on. This literally took me 2.5 minutes. Because A, I knew what I was doing, by the way. I'm operating at a level three or a level four competence, so I know how to prompt, what to prompt. I know I'm making this beautiful presentation for all of you wonderful participants. So I give it the right prompt. I take it to Gemini. I use a Gemini feature called Gemini Images. And then I give it a very sophisticated prompt saying it has to have only two colors, it has to be simple, it has to be laid out horizontally, it has to have this information, do not include this information, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, because I know how to do that and I give it one set of instructions, within literally about 7 to 8 to 12 seconds, I get an image like this, right? So that is in real practical terms, how you could be using AI. So this is what generative AI is, right? You give it inputs, it generates output. Large language models. So this is the AI brain that predicts what next word or next what is possibly the next word in a sentence. Sounds a little geeky. Let me break it down for you. So ChatGPT is a large language model. Grok, which is again product of Twitter or X, is a large language model. Gemini is a large language model. So what this essentially means is that when you start typing in a sentence, let us say you go into your ChatGPT and say, I need to draft a LinkedIn post for whatever, addressing these many people. Even if you make typing errors, even if you make mistakes, AI is trained to understand the language, understand the words being used, and intelligently interpret what it might have meant. So that's how all of these AI systems become smart. So large language models are these. ChatGPT is a large language model. Gemini uses large language models. So that's the concept. Prompting, I've already spoken about it. It's how you talk to the AI tool. Prompt engineering is what I just described now. Right, so I did not just give it a prompt with two lines saying, hey, I need to build a one slide deck defining AI terminology at a basic level. I don't do that. I broke it down into multiple examples saying I need it to be horizontal, it has to have these many colors, it should not have this, so on and so forth. That is what prompt engineering is all about, right? The simplest way to look at it is that if you were to hire a new person within your organization, you assume that this individual comes in with the skill set, and that's why you hired this person. But then you also want to explain, or you want to give them a very detailed description of what you want as an output. So the more detailed you are, the likelihood of getting a perfect output is higher, right? That's basically what prompt engineering does. These are basics. Again, you're probably familiar with this. Let me move on to what is a little bit more at an intermediate level. So what's hallucination? So AI sometimes sounds damn confident, but its answers are flat out wrong. One of the ways I discovered this is when I put in a large Excel sheet, which has probably 500 to 600 different data points, and I'm asking it for very specific calculations, right? It will give you an answer. It'll sound very confident. But you do not take these things at face value. You check, you ask, are you sure? Have you double checked it? If it comes through every single time, then you're fairly confident that, okay, it is good enough data. Another example is, let us say you want to gather some statistics, which is what I did in the previous slides, as you saw. I might give a brief saying, you know, I'm looking for recent Canadian stats on XYZ. It gives information. You literally ask back saying, are you sure of the sources? Can you reevaluate your assumptions and give me a better answer? It will give you a better answer. So hallucination is a thing that happens. You want to be careful. What is an AI agent? Now, we've all heard of these things. So if you go back to the level 4 AI capability slide that I was talking about, all this automation, which is autonomously handled through workflows, that is done by machines. And that machine activity is basically what is done by an AI agent, right? So imagine if you as a human being were to, like I said, draft an email, go into Zoom, set up a meeting, send an opening invitation to all the participants, transcribe it. These are all manual tasks. But with tools like N8N or Make.com, you can automate the entire workflow. And this automation that needs to be handled will be handled by a digital avatar of yours, for the lack of a better word. Digital avatar is not the most accurate description, but it is almost like you're deploying a machine to do the work on your behalf. You click on that magical start button and it actually runs through the entire workflow. So that's what an AI agent is all about. In very large enterprise organizations with very repetitive work, AI agents are already doing a lot of the heavy lifting. For instance, if there's a business where you get a lot of reports at the end of a Friday, right? And you have a standard process where you want to ingest all that. It could be, I'm just giving an example here. It could be, let's say, sales reports. You have multiple sales territories, all the numbers have come in through the week. At the end of the day, Friday, all of your sales representatives put in all their numbers in their sheets, docs, whatever format that you have defined, and all of that sits in the Google Drive. This AI agent can be timed to automatically, at a specific time, go in, get all that information, assimilate it, transcribe it, cut it down, structure it, put it into predefined template, and send a notification to you or maybe the management team on your preferred chat channel. It could be a Slack, it could be Google Chat, whatever you use, saying, these are the highlights. The numbers are these. Click here, and the entire document is in front of you. Now, this task would probably have taken half a day or an entire day, depending on the complexity of the task. But this entire thing can be handled by an AI agent. So that's what an AI agent can do. What's the difference between automation and AI agents? Some of you may be familiar with emails that come to you at a regular basis, right? So let's say you subscribe to a tool. Even better, let me give you an example of Groupon. I don't know how many of you have used Groupon. And I'm giving that to you as an example, right? Groupon has these deals. And if you are a member, you keep getting emails from them every 2 or 3 or 4 days. And this could happen even in most of your fashion retail outlets, right? Urban Planet or any of these places. They will keep sending you automated emails saying, hey, these are the best offers, these are new offers, these are in season, these are going to go off season, et cetera, et cetera. That is an email automation. AI is a little more sophisticated than that. AI will not just throw information at you. AI will actually find information, process it, validate it, check it, and not just give you the information, but give you a more richer and a more intuitive piece that might be relevant specifically to you, right? With an automation, you might still be sending one message to 50,000 users. With AI, that can be made far more intuitive. You can make it segmented. You can specifically send information to one chunk of your audience segment. All of that stuff can happen. Model, again, we have frequently used terms like large language models or models. Model is basically, again, a structured way in which AI operates. Training data, that's another term that you may have experienced a lot. Training data is basically how you train. So if I were to, like, same example, right? The same example of sales that I gave you. If you do that for the first month or even month and a half, the AI is learning. It's learning how to interpret the Google Sheets or the CSV files or the Excel sheets that you upload. It is learning to understand how you design your templates. It kind of learns over a period of time. By the sixth or the seventh or the eighth week, with all the feedback and tweaking that you've given into AI, AI now becomes a lot better. So that's what you refer to as training data. This goes back to one of the myths that I spoke about, where people feel that without having concrete, structured, finished data, you can't really start using AI. In fact, the other way is, you should look at it from the other way around, where you start giving it a lot of information in whatever structure or broken ways in which you have, and AI learns patterns over time. It will understand that, a Google Sheet for this particular information might look like this, it might also look like this, or it might have these exceptions, right? So that's what your training data is all about. These are some advanced terms. You may or may not have heard them too much. I'm just going to briefly talk about it. Natural language processing is the system or the methodology that AI uses to understand human language, right? So the way I speak English is very different from the way you might, or very different from the way someone else might be using the language. How is AI supposed to understand what you mean by that? So that's it uses this concept called natural language processing or NLP. Multimodal AI. So multimodal meaning each mode of media, right? So it could be images, it could be audio, it could be pictures, it could be text, it could be video. You can put all of this into AI and ask it to comprehensively go through all of that and give you a summarized output. that is possible today with AI. So that's what multimodal AI is all about. Parameters are nothing but settings, right? So you can go into ChatGPT, you can go into settings, and you can say, you know, be more lenient with your assessment, or you can give it in the settings, you can say that, you know, you can give your own profile. You can say, I am this person, this is my target audience, this is what I need. Based on the way you set the settings of your ChatGPT or Gemini, it will behave accordingly. You can make it extremely critical, you can make it lenient, so on and so forth. Artificial general intelligence is something that most AI builders or AI technologies are aspiring to get towards. We haven't really gotten there. One of the closer examples that I can give of that is your, you know, driverless self-driven cars, right? That is where you look at a practical application of something which is close to artificial general intelligence, where you're not defining its intelligence within a specific area. It is very broad. It's almost getting into the realm of how human beings operate, right? Most of us operate from a space of general intelligence, meaning you have specific roles, you do specific tasks, you have specific responsibilities. That is one part, but you operate with general intelligence, right? You are able to assimilate multiple sources of data, people, opinions, biases, factual data, statistics, numbers, visuals, etc. And that's how we operate as human beings. AI is still not quite there, but trying to get to that point is what artificial general intelligence aspires to be. What is vibe coding? Again, interesting, not many of you might be familiar with that, but vibe coding is the process where you don't write lines of code, you prompt. Like in ChatGPT, I might say, give me a LinkedIn post about something. I can go into a vibe coding tool, such as a Replit or a Lovable or Base 44. These are all tools that have been used for, or, you know, Copilot, Microsoft Copilot. You can actually give it instructions. So you can say, you know, give me the HTML code for a page and so on and so forth, and it'll actually write the entire backend code for you. Claude does this and so on. So that's what vibe coding is all about. And the most important thing here is context window. What is context window? Context window generally is how much information can AI hold. So if you are in ChatGPT, if you're on the free version, you may have noticed that if you ask a series of questions at some logical point, it starts forgetting how the conversation began because its context window is limited. So that's the concept of context window. Moving on, I'm at the kind of midpoint, a quick time check. Okay, we are doing okay. These are some examples of how AI could possibly be applicable in some of your most, you know, most commonly used use case scenarios. If you were looking at donor segmentation, I just picked that up as an example. The first column basically tells you what the manual process might look like in the current state. You identify donors, you segment them, you create messaging, you send campaigns, you follow up, and you analyze and improve. That's your general process, right? So right now you might be using past sheets, spreadsheets, you manually do the work and so on. If you were a level one user, you have started using ChatGPT to suggest donor types, right? So you might be able to take your past data, put it into ChatGPT and say, these are all the examples of donors and the donations that they have given. ChatGPT, can you suggest any untapped avenues that we could reach out to seek out more or newer donors, right? So that's an example of level one. Similarly, you can kind of use ChatGPT or any other AI, it could be Gemini, it could be Grok, anything else. And these are some examples of how it can be applied in different scenarios. I'm keeping the slide open. I'm letting you read this slide because I don't want to kind of slow down the process. Some of you might already have read through a lot. I'm going to talk you through this in a little bit more simplistic way. Level two is where you start using automation tools, which also have AI. Simple example. Let's look at the donor segmentation step, right? Let's say you already have segmented your donors based on two or three parameters, based on the location, based on the size of donation, let's assume, right? Based on that, let's say you have different email messages going out to these different cohorts, right? If you go into level two, the AI itself will suggest a few additional things. It might say something like, if you're sending out a segmentation, or if you're sending out a communication or a message to this audience within this region, these might be the best times to send out the email. Or the follow-up email should not go after 2 days, it should go after 24 hours, or something on those lines. Right? That would be a level two automation where AI is still not that effective, but it is, you're getting there. Level three is where AI will give you a lot more information. It starts becoming smarter than you could in that area, right? So if you've been doing this, if you've been using AI for 2, 3, or 4 months, based on the email open rate, based on how many people open the email, how many people clicked on which link within your email, the tool will start giving you information. It'll start suggesting that, hey, there are these segments of donors that are completely cold. They aren't opening emails, they're doing nothing. You can move them to this segment or do something else with that. That's what a level three would be able to accomplish. Level four, again, is where you're literally taking a bit more of a backseat and you're letting the automation drive for itself. So imagine a process where you have monthly donor outreach programs. Right now, you're doing it manually. You're kind of driving the entire thing. You have a set schedule. At a level four, you can literally deploy an AI agent that will handle most of this work on your behalf, if not all. Again, donor segmentation can be a fairly complex use case, so I would not say that you should use one or the other. You're in the best position to decide what is most appropriate to you. But the intention of this slide was to give you an example of what's possible and what's not. Fair enough. Again, any questions, please drop it in the chat. I'm going to go a little faster now. I have 8 or 9 minutes before I would like to open this up for Q&A. The next use case I was thinking of was grant writing. Again, very similar. You find grants, you understand the requirements, you draft a proposal, you customize and review, you submit and track, and you learn and improve. This is the process. Manually, this is what you would do, right? You would search, you would identify grant opportunities, you would go through long requests for proposals manually, you would write out a draft proposal, or maybe use a template, review and check, and so on. Again, with level one, you start using ChatGPT or any of these tools to kind of make your work a little easier. You might feed it a template, which is your organization's writing style with your logo, your signature, your sign-off message, and so on. And then, look at the grant, RFP, and then basically, given that as an input, you can ask ChatGPT to generate a first draft of how you would respond to that. Right. Again, in level two, you can reuse past proposals, you can manually track a bunch of things, and so on.
Sorry
Yeah.
to interrupt you. Did you get a chance to see the chat? It's from Shreya. Can you increase the context window, or is it standard that the LLM goes off?
Great question. Context windows can be increased up to a point. So if you typically are using paid tools, then that automatically increases the context windows, your context window. There are also ways to manipulate context window. Please hold on to this question. Great question. I would love to answer that at the end of our Q&A. There are ways in which you can do that. For instance, if you've asked 15, 20 questions in a single chat sequence, and by the end of it, either you're out of credits or it's saying, upgrade to a paid version, or even if you have a paid version, you will start noticing that, responses become super slow. Write a prompt and you wait and you wait and you wait. It might time out. When that happens, you know that, it's kind of getting exhausted. It needs a tea break or a lunch break. So what you do is there are ways in which you can ask ChatGPT to kind of summarize all the key takeaways and give that to you as a downloaded document. You download the document, start a new chat. There are things again like GPTs, there are GPT projects. I won't get into that, it's fairly technical. But those are ways in which you can go upload this document and then continue conversations from that point, right? So these are ways to hack the situation. Okay, love it. Please keep sending in your questions. Again, level three and level four, like I was just talking about, you can start using tools more intuitively and it might seem a little intimidating, but you just have to start. It's like learning to cycle or learning to swim, right? There's only this much that you can do from by theory, but once you learn, you once you start using it, you start becoming way more confident and comfortable, and you will know for yourself where things can be trusted and where they can't, or where you should manually double check and verify facts. Moving along, failure patterns, right? Where does AI fail? It fails if there's incomplete data. It fails, or it could fail if there's duplicate data because it's confusing AI. In a situation like that, or it could be outdated information, right? So when you're putting that information as a prompt engineer, what you want to do is you want to basically write a prompt saying that this data that I'm feeding in may be incomplete. If you find duplicates, read them out, or check for information that is most recent from all the information that I've uploaded. So when you put these disclaimers into whatever work that you're doing, AI now knows that this is not the absolute truth. You're giving AI the permission and the freedom to go and use its own intelligence to study what you've given it and then throw an output. In a lot of cases, and again, this is very natural, this is very human behavior, right? We tend to use AI the way we would have worked with an individual, with humans, or with the way we would operate. A lot of times I challenge myself to go beyond and just empower AI to give you what it thinks is the best way out, and you will be surprised. You'll be surprised with the kind of output that it gives you, right? So not many, many of you may have heard that, you need to give AI a role. What does that mean? So for instance, when I write LinkedIn posts, I would typically tell AI, assume that you are one of the most effective writers. You have a lot of experience writing viral posts for LinkedIn. See, when you're saying these things, when you're giving it a role, AI now has a narrower context within which it has to start thinking. It is now thinking from the vantage point of a writer who writes for getting more engagement on LinkedIn. So when you do those things, AI becomes a lot more intuitive. It'll give you better answers, right? So that's how you deal with these failure patterns. So again, things like wrong segmentation, poor targeting, low quality output, all of these things can be controlled if you kind of are aware that these are potential failure patterns and you've got to work with them. Another challenge is blind trust in AI output. Like I kept saying, just double check, right? Even if the answer sounds very intelligent, AI can hallucinate. It can give you very convincing answers while it might actually be factually completely wrong. So you've got to kind of check, right? Like it says, accept, you don't blindly accept AI output. If you don't verify and if you trust instantly, that's a problem. AI responses need to be double checked. If you don't do that, then you might get the wrong messaging, incorrect details, misleading information. You want to stay away from that. Another failure pattern is loss of human voice and trust, right? And I've seen this happen in a lot of cases. When you're trying to extract information or use AI, it could possibly start sounding very mechanical, right? So, for example, if there is a very complex HR situation that I need to deal with, and I'm not exactly aware of the rules and regulations or the Ontario laws around something, it might help for me to kind of go into AI and do some pointed research, verify my facts. But if I just copy that and paste it in an email and send it out to an individual, it kind of completely defeats the purpose, right? So that is where you want to kind of make sure that you're leveraging AI for the right reasons in the right context, but you've got to humanize it in the way you actually apply it in the real world, right? So personalized tone, authentic, personalized tone in the messaging, all of those things matter. By the way, all these infographics that you've seen are all generated using AI. So that's what I did. I kind of got the information, I put it out, but in a human form, I'm explaining to you all with regards to how you need to, accept or take in this information and apply it in your workplace. So that's what you would want to do. Again, the other risk is privacy and data misuse. Be very careful before you put data inputs which are sensitive. AI, like I said, learns from your data, right? So if you're giving it information that is very personal to you or to your organization, there's a risk that that information is being taken in by the AI to improve the AI model itself, which means that that intelligence is now going to be used for somebody else who might be querying a ChatGPT for similar information. So you've got to be careful about these things, which is why you have pro and business accounts in most of these tools, where you can contain the information of the organization within the organization, right? So you need to kind of be careful about these things. So data, donor data, personal information, sensitive records, be careful. Do not just blindly put it on a free account or a not controlled environment. Yeah, that's the risk, data exposure and privacy breach. Inadequate governance, that's the last piece, again, super critical. You want to make sure that you manually are on top of things as you apply AI within your workspace. Uncontrolled usage is the number one issue. What I mean by that is, if you have a 10-member team, somebody's using ChatGPT, somebody's using the paid version, somebody's using Gemini, and there is some conflict happening between that, right? So you want to kind of understand that that's a real situation. We run into it. I run this organization. We have about 20, 25 employees in Canada. We have about 120 employees in India. These things will always happen. So you've got to have a system to manage that and regulate it in a way where you can control the output. Same thing, level two is the same thing that I'm talking about. Without proper oversight, AI use without rules, like I said, settings, constraints, these things have to be structured so that five people using the AI do not come back with five completely different answers. So yeah, those are the risks. So I think manual human governance is super, super important. And that is even more true when you're at level four, because the risk of exposure and damage at a level four is way higher than a level one, right? Because in level four or level three, you're automating an entire process. So if there's something that's going wrong, if a connection is broken, or if an LLM piece within an entire workflow is not working right, you have to have a way to catch it and fix it. If you don't, if you trust it blindly to run, you would not even know that there's a mistake in the way the output has come out. So you've got to be careful about that. Ethical AI, again, these are standards that you want to follow as you adopt and use AI within your organization. You want to make sure that you prevent harm, bias, and discrimination in the use of AI. Now, these are all recommendations by the Ontario Human Rights Commission, by the Court of Canada, the government frameworks, and so on. So these are standards that you want to apply. And these are examples of how you want to manage this. Right? Do not target only a specific segment of donors. Or within transparency, you add a note in email saying, yeah, assisted content, or you kind of have those transparent disclaimers and you kind of give this information out. Accountability, you want to assign clear responsibility and oversight. You want to protect personal data. We kind of went through that. And assess risks and verify output before use. Do not assume that an email draft that has been written by AI is ideal to go by its own. You will still need to kind of take a look at that, because ultimately, you're accountable for whatever goes out of your email inbox, as an example. Okay, I'm going a little fast now. I'm kind of running out of time. I'm getting on to the most interesting part now, which is how you use it in your current situation. So right now, as you sit today, you might be at a level zero or a level one where you use it occasionally, or so on and so forth. You want to look at these three areas, which is current usage, AI usage levels. How ready are you in terms of what you use? And what is the outcome you want out of these 30, 60, and 90 days? How will you do that? How would you know what level you are at and what you should do? Here is a 10-point questionnaire. Don't stress about this. After this presentation, CASA would be putting up, or they would be sending out a document to you that's like a after training workbook that you could use, and you can take this back at your workplace or at your own pace, and you can do this after the session. So don't worry about this. I'm walking you through on how to use this once you get the asset, right? There are 10 basic questions on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the least and 5 being the best. You self-assess your existing AI maturity as an organization. It gives you a total score. If your total score is between 10 to 25, you are at a beginner level, right? What you need to do at that level is start using these tools, learn how the tool work, and manually review every single piece of output. I'm at a point now where I know when I want to check, when I think I can trust the AI's response for the most part. Intermediate is when you land up at 26 to 40 points, right? So if you go in here, and if you tally the points, let's say you give two and then three and then one and then four and then three, you total all the points, and then if you are between 26 to 40, you're at an intermediate level. 41 to 50, you are at a fairly advanced level. That's how you interpret your score. And if you're at the beginner level, this is generally your 30, 60, and 90 days plan. You use tools, identify 3 to 5 tasks, assign AI owners and stakeholders within your organization. You start writing prompts, save those prompts, and share the prompt with your colleague, because the way you prompt, if it's really sophisticated and it is giving you the results that you want, you do not want your colleague or somebody else to kind of be at the beginning of the learning curve. You kind of give them what you've already tried and tested and which you know works really well. Similarly, 60 days, you rinse and repeat, you get better. 90 days, you stabilize, and then you kind of get better at what you do. If you're at a beginner level, within 90 days, if you have come to level two, or even if you're touching level three, that's great. It takes a lot of time to get to level four. So I'm just laying out expectations in a very realistic manner, right? So that's what you want to do. If you are at an intermediate level, then the 30, 60, 90 days plan might look a little different. It's assumed that you're already at level one. You're doing a lot of what I spoke about. Within 60 and 90 days, you can aspire to go towards level four. Again, depending on how much of an AI adoption you've already had within your organization. Okay, we are probably 3 minutes before we hit one. Questions. I know some of you had some questions, but feel free to ask. Again, that's the way you can reach out to me and connect with me. Yes, please. Go ahead.
We have some questions in the chat. This is a question from Nasima. How safe is it for confidentiality, and how to protect any spam junk content which may hamper my data, her database?
Yeah, so like I said, you want to be careful about what information you put. First of all, please use a paid account. And if you go into the settings, there are settings where you can say that this is for the organization only, then this cannot be used by a ChatGPT as general input or general information. You can do that. You will get information that's not always effective. When you go into ChatGPT, when you select on the chat, on the prompt area where you kind of start typing in, if you look below, there are those filters. You select that. And you use those features. So it could be, actively research the web, or generate images. So you select those parameters, and then you again validate, right? If the AI gives you a response, especially if it is data centric, just ask AI. Just ask, is this true? Do you want to verify the answers? 9 out of 10 times, it will give you a better response. If you're not convinced, trust your gut. You have to go out and do your own research, especially at the beginning, because you can't completely blame AI here. It might also be that you might not be asking it the right way. So it's a learning experience on both sides, right? So you've got to be empathetic towards yourself and allow yourself that learning
Thank you.
curve. Anything
Next
else?
up. Yeah, there is one more question. With the increasing use of AI, how can we advocate for the use of ethical and bias-free AI, like DuPA, Bill C-63, and Bill C-9 include ethical use of AI?
What I covered here is basically addressing most of those. The specific bills you're talking of is again very, very specific. I haven't personally looked into those bills, so I can't speak as effectively for those specific use cases. But generally speaking, the slide that I covered on ethical AI, you know what, let me just go there. Give me one quick second. There, right? So these are the sources based on which I've gotten specific guidelines. And these are the places that you could possibly go to and follow the systems. If I were you, and if I am trying to run a ChatGPT tool within my organization, I would go to the Ontario Human Rights Commission, look for their specific page where it talks about guidelines for ethical AI. I would copy the entire contents, feed it into ChatGPT, and specifically tell ChatGPT that in any output that you give me, let it be within the constraints of these guidelines. That's what I would do, right? That way you're reasonably assured that whatever it gives you is within those guidelines. And if there is some deviation, ChatGPT will call it out. It'll literally say that this could be bordering on output that may kind of be a gray area, so be watchful. So that's how you want to use it.
Thanks, Raghu. There is one more question from Sami Hassan. You mentioned ChatGPT quite a bit. Is this your recommended AI platform, or is there any other that is more ethical? And
Well, the area of ethics is not that much of a concern. I personally use ChatGPT a lot. In fact, OpenAI came up with ChatGPT way before Gemini and most other tools got onto it. So I happen to be a power user of ChatGPT. I use it most effectively for most of my situations. That's why I speak to it. If you were to speak to somebody else who has been more of a Gemini user, you might get a slightly different variation. But quite honestly, in my experience, I've used Gemini too. I use Perplexity a lot. I use Claude. I use all of these tools. Somehow I feel that Chat GPT 5.2, again, I'm not advocating for them. I have no personal benefit out of this. But as a practical user, I see that being a lot more sophisticated in the way it can respond to your questions. And also, you develop a rapport with it over time. Because I've been using ChatGPT for this long, it understands who I am. It understands what my area of focus is. It understands what I like, what I don't like. I put a lot of features in my settings. So I've developed that relationship with ChatGPT where I feel a lot more confident doing that. If I were to today start using, let's say, Grok, which I haven't really used much at all, I will have to train Grok on everything that I've done with ChatGPT for the last year and a half. So that is the reason why I'm personally a little more biased towards ChatGPT. But again, it's a race of with all these LLMs, it's a race to the finish line. So they all are pretty competent. Somebody is a little maybe a step ahead or a step behind another, but they all are pretty useful that way. I personally use ChatGPT a lot, so I would probably more confidently vouch for it.
okay, and it's more friendly for nonprofits as well. Do you?
I believe so. I believe so. It's not, again, there is, it would be wrong for me to say it is ideal for not-for-profits. There is no real, there's no data to back that up, quite honestly. But as an individual user, I prefer that because it understands information with, like I said, natural language processing. I can manage to get what I want more effectively and easily. Not to mention that Gemini can do it. Gemini could very well do it, but I can speak from my experience.
Sounds good. We don't have any more questions in the chat, and we will just open up the floor. If someone has any questions, they can raise their hand and can ask.
Yeah.
We can give 2 more minutes. It's almost 1:03, so.
Yeah. I think we went a little.
It's fine. It's completely fine.
Ruth, I think Ferdows has a question in the chat. It's
If
with
you don't know.
increasing use of AI, how can we advocate for the use of ethical and bias-free AI? Do you
We
see
did
that
that.
one? Okay, sorry.
We did that.
Okay.
No worries. Yeah. We did
Yeah,
that.
yeah.
This question was covered. Question if nobody else is asking. This was great. As everyone's saying, very, very informative, but it can also be overwhelming. And I know you have like a 30-day, 60-day, 90-day plan to, get to it as a beginner, as an organization or as an individual. I suppose it would help. But is there like, can you or can a consultant guide an organization through this process? Because like, as we start following even the 30-day or 60-day plan, I
Yeah.
feel a lot of questions will come up as we adapt
Yep.
to tools, because there is like the realm of unknown is so vast here. So
Yeah.
like I don't know if there are services out there, and if can you guide us about
Yeah.
that? Can we consult
Yeah, no, I
someone?
think it makes a lot of sense to for somebody who's already been there, done that, to handhold you through the paces. I have been, like I said, I'm a vice president with the board of directors at the Sampradaya Dance Creations, Mississauga. I've been with them for over 7 years. I kind of mentor them. I also help in advising organizations including not-for-profits, on how they can adopt AI. It is dicey. There are a lot of pitfalls here, and I don't want to sound as if it's all going to be a cakewalk. It is tricky, as is adopting anything that is new. The fears are real. So it would really speed up your learning curve if you were to work with a consultant or an expert who can, kind of warn you of what to look for and make your life easier.
So, has the organization that you're with, Sampradaya, have they adopted AI in their operations and their everyday use? And how is that going?
They are in the process of doing stuff. Again, like I said, it's different levels of adoption happening there. So yeah, again, it's all very, people are still at their nascent stages in terms of adopting AI and getting on into automation and things like that. But yes, it would certainly help to have somebody, consult or walk you through the processes. It just makes things faster and quicker.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Jessica. Any other questions?
I don't think we have any questions. We are good with the chat. There is no. Okay, so thank you so much, Raghu, for your such an insightful and engaging presentation, and we truly appreciate you sharing your expertise and practical guidance with us today. I would also like to thank you, everyone, for attending today's session, and I hope that you have found it informative and it has added to your knowledge. So the recording, the presentation slides, and all the relevant resources will be shared with you via email, hopefully before the end of this week. And thank you once again for your time and engagement. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, everyone. I
Thank
appreciate
you. Thank you. Thank you.
it.
Bye.
Thank you, Kasa.
Bye.